It's a pleasure to have him back on. We've had him on previously. He is senior writer at Entertainment Weekly. He is somebody who is one of the foremost people, one of the foremost sources covering the movie industry, and thus up on this week's Academy Awards, and an excellent person to talk to as far as what to expect Sunday night. Dave Carger from Entertainment Weekly. Dave, welcome back to the FDH Lounge. Great to have you on again, sir. How are you tonight?
I'm doing just fine. How about yourself?
Oh, fine, thanks. It's a pleasure to get you back on, and it's really interesting. I've been taking a look at some of the sports book odds in some of the main categories here. What could be a better sense of what the market thinks, I suppose, than the odds at various sports books? And it's just amazing to me as somebody who I personally am not hugely immersed in all the award season type stuff. So I'm looking at this a little bit as kind of a neophyte, but I'm just blown away by what heavy favorites there are in some categories here. And it's interesting that with some categories being expanded to 10 nominees, it really hasn't done a whole lot, it seems, to democratize the process. You're still going to have some heavy favorites regardless.
Yeah, I think The King's Speech, which is the movie that had the most nominations this year, had 12 nominations. It really is the heavy favorite to win. It did not win the Golden Globe, but as people are learning over the last couple of years, winning a Golden Globe doesn't really mean you're going to win an Oscar, and that's because nobody who votes on the Golden Globes also votes on the Oscars. It's separate voting bodies. But on the other hand, there are these three other awards that precede the Oscars, which are the Producers Guild, Directors Guild, and Screen Actors Guild. Those awards do have overlap between them and the Oscar voters, and those are the three big awards that The King's Speech has won. So that's why I think that's the movie that has the edge over The Social Network at this point.
You know, it's very interesting because I'm looking at the odds at one book here, Social Network plus 100, King's Speech minus 500. From there, it jumps to The Fighter at plus 2,000, meaning that, again, for every $100 you put down, you get back $2,000, and it goes from there. Other ones in the category, plus 5,000, 2,500, all the way up to 4,000 there. It's absolutely incredible that it is such a consensus that, again, King's Speech, a fairly heavy favorite, but if it ain't the King's Speech, it'll be The Social Network. Amazing that you can all but rule out 8 of the 10 nominees in a category.
Oh, absolutely. If there's a movie besides The King's Speech that's going to win, it's The Social Network and absolutely no other. I mean, The Fighter has the most outside of outside chances to win, and then the other 7, no way. So I can see why the bookies are having such a big spread, if I'm using the right terminology even, that you would make so much money if 127 Hours or Black Swan or Winter's Bone or Inception actually wins, because there's just no way that's going to happen.
And I'm looking at this, and again, I'll be the first to admit that this is more of a surface glance that I'm giving here. I'm not as much up on the nuances of the awards, but I'll just say that looking at it on the surface, now that it's 10 nominees here, Toy Story 3, I mean, am I correct in surmising that's one that, for whatever reason, call it unfair bias or call it fair if you like, that wouldn't have made the cut back in the days of 5 pictures, would it?
No. Back in the days of 5 Best Picture nominees, only once ever did an animated movie get in, and that was Beauty and the Beast in 1991. Then, last year when they doubled it to 10, that's when Up got in there. That's an animated film, of course, and then Toy Story. So I think it's pretty clear that if there had just been 5 nominees, it would have been Social Network, The King's Speech, Inception, True Grit, and The Fighter. And then you have the other 5, which are kind of like the B-list, you know, Black Swan, 127 Hours, Toy Story, The Kids Are All Right, and Winter's Bone. Those are the 5 that kind of snuck in there because of those extra slots.
And again, and this is more of a surface question about the industry as well, because I honestly don't know what I'm about to ask you, if this is cause or effect, but it does seem to me, if I'm looking at this correctly, disproportionately, you're looking at movies that have been released in the later part of the year that seem to be representing come awards season here. Is it a thing where those are the ones that are freshest in the minds of the voters, or is it a thing where it's tailored, where a studio might be looking at it like, hey, this is something, I'm not necessarily sure this is going to be huge box office, but this is something that can win us a bunch of awards. If we want to maximize it, let's release it in November. Which is it on the cause and effect?
I think it's both. Okay. I think that over the years, you know, the movies that came out later in the year were the ones that did well, and also that's when the studios put out the kind of more prestige films. You think of a holiday film season, that's when, you know, the big Oscar guns come out. And I equate it to, like, when you go to a really great restaurant, at least for me, when I walk out, I'm talking about how great the dessert was, because that's the freshest thing in my mind. I think that's what happens with a lot of these Oscar voters. And for instance, when the nominations came out, I think the one thing that surprised the most people is that Christopher Nolan, who directed Inception, even though the movie got 8 nominations, he himself was not nominated for Best Director, even though people thought that he would be. And people ask me, well, how can that be? And I think the answer is just his movie came out in the summer, and the 5 movies that did get nominated for Best Director are all movies that came out in October, November, or December. So I think it's not like a snub against Christopher Nolan as much as it was 5 movies that came out later in the year that just kind of usurped his position.
Well, that makes sense as far as how these things come to be. I'm looking at this also, too, in terms of best actress odds. Natalie Portman at minus 2,000 for Black Swan. It's interesting because, again, when you're looking at best picture, it seems to be down to The King's Speech and The Social Network, and you've got the Black Swan back there as a real dark horse, if not long shot. And yet, Natalie Portman, with her performance that she gave here, I mean, only a Annette Bening at plus 400 on the odds that I'm looking at here for her role in The Kings Are All Right has her even remotely in her sights. So in a movie that may not clean up that much in and of itself, Natalie Portman from an award standpoint looks to be the bright shining light.
Absolutely. I mean, Black Swan did only get 5 nominations. I actually expected it to get more. So I think in the overall season, it's not that big of a player, but her performance obviously is at the forefront of the Best Actress race. She's won all of the big awards leading up to it. But there are some people who do think that Annette Bening could actually upset her because she is, you know, really Hollywood royalty. She's on the board of governors of the Academy. She's been nominated 3 times before and has never won, whereas Natalie Portman's only been nominated once before. Both of their movies got nominated for Best Picture, so there's support for both of the films, Black Swan and The Kids Are All Right. So I think there's a chance for an upset, but I think the safe money is definitely on Natalie Portman at this point.
And again, looking at this, because I tend to look at these more so around the time of award season, and particularly if we're going to be doing anything like this with the show, I don't really look at this over a prolonged period of time. You, of course, are somebody who's immersed in this, so I know you're going to be able to answer my question. Is this year kind of atypical? I'm looking at a lot of these categories here, and even if it's not Natalie Portman looking like a runaway winner there, or Colin Firth for his role in The King's Speech looking like a runaway for Best Actor, even if it's not anything like that, the fact that it seems to be down to, okay, it's either going to be this one, or if it's not this one, it's this one or this one in a category. In short, does there seem to be less drama this year in some of the major categories, or am I reading that wrong?
I feel like this kind of happens every year where the problem is that there's just too many shows leading up to the Oscars. So last year, Jeff Bridges basically won every Best Actor award leading up to the Oscars for Crazy Heart, and then he won. Sandra Bullock, you know, she kind of came out of the gate late with The Blind Side, but she was winning everything, and then she won. And then the 2 supporting categories, those races were over before they even began. It was Monique for Precious, and it was Christoph Waltz from Inglourious Basterds, and nobody else had a chance of beating them. I think this year might be a little different in that, even though, let's look at supporting actress, even though Melissa Leo from The Fighter, who plays the mother, has basically won everything, there are a lot of people who think that's actually a close race, and that her co-star Amy Adams, who was also nominated, and even Hailee Steinfeld, the star of True Grit, is only 14 years old. I think either of those 2 could win as well. So that one's actually a race. And Best Director is a race this year because you have David Fincher for The Social Network and Tom Hooper for The King's Speech. And I think that one is really up for grabs and could go either way.
I had a question that was put to me earlier today by a degenerate gambler friend of mine who knew you were going to be coming on the show here tonight, that essentially if you were to try to identify a dark horse in any of these categories, if you were to give your imprimatur and say, this is one in this category, not a lot of people think he or she has a chance to break through, or it in the form of a picture, but I think it could. If you're looking at something outside the range of the favorites in any of the major categories, or any of the categories, I suppose, what's one that you would have your eye on?
supporting actress, one of the two also-rans that I mentioned. I think going with Amy Adams, I don't know what her numbers are on what you've got in those sheets. Going with Amy Adams or going with Hailee Steinfeld could be a way to take a little bit of a calculated risk. I should not be advocating gambling of any sort, though, right? But if you were, then I think that's one of the ways that you could go and go a little bit different and have a shot at actually, you know, being right.
Exactly. We advocate following the laws in all 50 states on this show. Gambling is wrong. Having said that, let me quote you the numbers. You tell me what you think on the accuracy. Melissa Leo -400. So that's, I mean, that's a pretty good favorite there. Helena Bonham Carter +400. Hailee Steinfeld +300. Jackie Weaver +2,000. Amy Adams +2,000. So that's a nice payoff if you're right on Amy Adams. That's really something where, you know, one of the two longest shots in the field, and yet you think she's, I guess, in the parlance of the business, a live underdog.
She's alive. I've heard from many voters that marked her name off on that ballot. So that might be a fun way to go.
Okay. All right. Well, anybody that was ever on The Office is okay with me. So that's a sentimental favorite in my
book.
There
you go.
But it is really interesting, again, from the prism of this, because as I say, I'm looking at this now and I'm seeing maybe not a lot of suspense in a lot of these categories, and looking again on the surface like 2011 could be an atypical year. But again, for somebody like you who looks at this year in and year out, it's interesting how you related it back to past years, and that, you know, this is a conversation we might very well have had in other years. That, yeah, not a lot of suspense this year. You know, I guess every year is always the good old days after it's like 10 years down the road, I suppose.
It's true. But, you know, one thing I will say about this year is that it seems like basically all of the big movies that are going to win the awards are movies that most people have actually seen. The King's Speech just crossed $100 million at the box office. So did Black Swan. Inception was a huge hit. Social Network did very well. So Toy Story 3 was a blockbuster. Alice in Wonderland stands to win one or two Oscars, and it, of course, was one of the biggest movies of the year. So compared to last year, where the winner was The Hurt Locker, which was like one of the lowest grossing Best Picture winners of all time, although a great movie, this is the year where I think a lot of people will have seen basically all of the big winners.
That's true, and they have done pretty good box office, and a lot of times people think it's mutually exclusive on being recognized as a top movie or you know, getting the good box office. It's interesting to see that there's been a blurring on some of these ones as far as being critical favorites and box office ones as well. Among the many links that we have up on our site here tonight at the FDHLounge.com on our rundown, we always link to some things with our guests here. It's always relevant to find the Twitter page for our guests. As such, looking at your Twitter feed here tonight, Dave Karger, I see that you have that you're linking to from there your debut on The Road to the Oscars on Oscar.com. Talk about what that's like to be doing a feature on the official Oscar website.
Yeah, they actually called me and asked me to participate in their official Oscar.com programming this year. It's called Road to the Oscars, and it's a new episode every day for the 10 days leading up to the Oscar ceremony. So it's going on right now, and if you just go to Oscar.com, it loads automatically, and each day, the whole thing is hosted by Chris Harrison, who hosts The Bachelor on ABC, and it's like a 5 or 6 or 7 minute mini show every day about a different aspect of the Oscars, and within each day's show, I present one of the 10 Best Picture nominees and talk about what its merits are and what it has going for it, and they show some clips from the film. So it's been great fun to do. I had a really good time doing it, and it's fun to watch a new episode every day.
Oh, interesting. And that's got to be a great cross-promotion then for your work at Entertainment Weekly.
That's right. So it always helps.
Oh, that is tremendous. And so you've got that going on. And for somebody like you, for a journalist who's so immersed in this, what's the show day like for you Sunday? How do things basically unfold? Take us inside the life of one of the top reporters on the scene here, one of the guys who covers this stuff year-round. What's the day of the awards like for Dave Karger?
Well, it's going to be a very long day this year because my work with Oscar.com continues on the day of the show. So this year they've asked me to be the official red carpet greeter of all of the nominees and presenters. This is something that a guy named Army Archer, who was an old-time columnist for Variety, used to do for 47 years. For the last 5 years, it was Robert Osborne from Turner Classic Movies. But this year they asked me to do it. So I will be actually showing up at the Kodak Theater, I think, really early, about 9 o'clock for a rehearsal. And then from 2 o'clock to 5 o'clock, I'll be standing on a little platform on the red carpet, and I'll have a PA system. And for all of the fans that are in the bleachers watching the red carpet arrivals, I'll be announcing each presenter and each nominee as they walk down the carpet and interviewing them for a minute or two. So that's going to be really fun. And then while the actual ceremony is taking place on ABC, people who go on to Oscar.com can watch me hosting a backstage show where I'll kind of be giving like a play-by-play of everything that's going on during the Oscars. So their hope is that the real diehard Oscar fans will have the telecast on their televisions, and then they'll have their laptops in their lap, and while they're tweeting and Facebooking, they'll have Oscar.com up, and I'll be co-hosting this backstage show, giving a little bit of commentary about what's going on. So it's going to be basically 6 hours of nonstop me talking. So I'll probably be pretty hoarse by the end. And then I go to the Elton John party and have a couple cocktails.
Well, and it's fascinating the way that the Academy, as do other institutions for events like this, how they've been able to embrace and incorporate social media into this, as you alluded to, with people following with Facebook and Twitter, but also with what you're doing. I mean, that's pretty sweet, because, I mean, I can only describe that as essentially you will be providing basically the Mystery Science Theater 3000 feed from backstage at the Oscars on their official website while it's going on. That is a pretty sweet gig, Dave.
I'm really excited about it, and I was very happy when they asked me to do it. And to be the greeter on the carpet is actually quite an honor. I remember I went to the Oscars for the first time in 1998, which was the year the Titanic won, and I remember walking down the carpet and seeing Army Archer doing that, and I thought to myself, wow, that'd be really fun to do one day, and now I get to do it, so I'm really excited.
It's interesting, too, because you just know that, I don't know if it's 10 years down the road, 20, 50, whatever, they're going to have this all smoothed out, and it'll probably be all on one platform, and you'll be able to get it mobile and everything else like that, but in this time of fragmentation and all these things that more or less complement one another with Twitter and Facebook and everything like that, you know, you're doing this at a very transformational time for that Oscars.com, or the Oscar.com website there. That really is amazing. I mean, you'll always be able to look back on this whenever the thing, you know, continues to evolve into what it's going to become and say, hey, you know, back in 2011, I was doing this gig backstage while it was going on. That'll be some cool memories.
Yeah, it's funny. I'm sure you've seen that clip on that's making the rounds on YouTube now from the Today Show from the early 90s when Katie Couric and Brian Gumbel were saying, what is the internet?
Yeah.
And they're all talking about it. It's actually quite funny. And you know what? It's not that long ago, and things have really changed. But it's exciting to be part of, definitely.
Well, I guess they pulled it down. I mean, I hate to tell the party poopers at NBC that you can't put the toothpaste back in the tube. You know, first of all, somebody's going to resave it and put it up at Daily Motion or some other place like that, which has probably already been done. I saw the thing. You saw the thing. It is kind of funny because, you know, 94, yeah, it was right in that range of where we were only starting to get familiarized with it. But I got to say, too, for two people in the media center of the universe doing the Today Show, you know, I could see if that was me or you or whatever at that point in time. I got to think two people on the Today Show, you know, back in early 94 still should have sounded a little more educated about the web than that, Dave.
I know. It really does realize how far we've all come, though, doesn't it? It just makes you realize that's wasn't that long ago, but people were still trying to figure the whole thing out.
Oh, that's amazing. Yeah, it really is. And, you know, now you've got all these things going on. I would imagine, you know, Entertainment Weekly's got to be like everything else. I'm sure, you know, there's a lot of sweet apps that are out for the iPhone and the iPad and stuff like that, huh? I'm sure your content is being transmitted in a lot of ways like that to the people.
Absolutely. We actually do have an iPad app, which instead of doing the whole magazine on the iPad, we take one of the most popular features of the magazine, which is called the Must List, which is where we do the 10 things that everyone should know about in the worlds of movies, TV, music, video games, DVD, and we put all of those 10 things on the iPad each week, and that's actually been really popular so far.
Interesting. Well, we always give our guests a chance to plug anything and everything here, Dave. So if somewhere along the way anything's been left out between your work for Oscar.com, Entertainment Weekly, anything else you got going along, your Twitter page, which we linked to tonight, you are DaveKager at Dave Karger, all lowercase on Twitter. Anything and everything we didn't get to, Dave, put it out there for the people.
You got it. Well, I really appreciate it. Thanks so much.